Dogs make the best companions for humans. This podcast aims to help make humans better companions for their dogs. Welcome to the Beru Podcast, a modern lifestyle podcast for dogs and their people. I'm your host, Charlotte Bain. I've been caring for other people's dogs for more than 15 years. And while I've learned a lot in my career, I definitely don't know it all. So I've collected an ever-evolving roster of amazing dog people, and I learn new things from them all the time. Hi, you guys. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the Beru Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Chris Lynch. Chris is an award-winning author of several highly acclaimed young adult novels and a National Book Award finalist. He joins me to talk about his latest middle grade novel, Walkin' the Dog, which is a moving story about a young boy and the life lessons he learns from his four-legged friends, and the unexpected paths they lead him on. Chris also shares his own stories of the guidance and lessons he has learned from the special dogs in his life. So, let's just jump into the chat.
That's Selke.
Hi, Selke. Selke. Hi. What kind of puppy is she?
A lurcher. Greyhound Saluki mix.
A lurcher. Okay. Okay, I was going to say she looks like a wire-haired greyhound to me.
Yeah.
I've never heard of a lurcher.
Saluki gives her the hair.
It's gorgeous. How old is she?
3 and a half.
Okay. She's still young. Is she your only puppy?
She is, as of now. We just had to put one down about a month ago.
No,
he's actually,
I'm so sorry.
I don't know if you've seen the actual copy of the book, but he's in my my author photo, Dexter.
How old was he, may I ask?
13 and a half.
Okay. So he had a nice life, a nice long life.
He did.
Yeah.
The end was hard, though.
Yeah, it's always, it's super tough. And I'm sorry that you're going through that. And I know it has its moments, you know, but I'm sure he had a wonderful life with you.
Yeah, it was great. It was better for me than it was for him.
Yeah. How's she faring with the loss?
She's doing okay.
Yeah.
She's not unaffected.
Yeah.
The first week she was like having accidents in the night.
Interesting.
On okay. The floor, which she hadn't done for a while.
Yeah.
And I would say that she seems a little bit more shy now,
mm-hmm.
because she always had Dex. She was never alone, ever.
Yeah.
Because even when we got her at the rescue place, she was there with her brother. So, and we
okay.
got her at 11 weeks, and then we brought her home from
okay.
there. And then she was Dexter's sidecar.
Little sister, sidekick.
Yeah.
So she's always had somebody to look up to and guide her, kind of, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Those transitions can be really tough. But dogs are very adaptable. They do tend
yeah.
to find their way.
Yeah, she's learning to like being the only child pretty quickly.
Really? She's like, this is not too tough. That our dogs growing up were like that. As soon as my parents had two poodles, and as soon as the brother died, like the sister just started thriving. She was like so happy to be the only.
Well, it's almost like Selke is going, what? There are no rules for me now? Does that mean that guy was responsible for all those rules?
Exactly. She gets all the extra. She gets extra spoiled in all the things right now. That's really sweet. Are you in Scotland right now?
Yep.
You are? Okay. And you live there most of the time? You're back
most
and forth.
Most of the time,
yeah.
Most of my people are still in Massachusetts, though. All my relatives, most of my oldest friends.
Yeah.
I'll be going there actually in just about under a week to do some,
okay.
some book business.
Oh, that's great. You have written several award-winning books for young readers, but we're going to talk about your newest book today, which is appropriate for my podcast because it's called Walkin' the Dog, and it centers kind of around a middle grade boy's, he's kind of an introvert, I would say, correct? And he...
Yeah.
it kind of centers around his journey in and his growth that's pretty much guided by his launch of a dog walking business, unintentionally his launch of a dog walking business, and kind of the characters that he meets along the way and how he grows and changes and gains confidence. And it really speaks to the human-animal bond. And as you say in your book, all dogs are guide dogs in the end. And I love that quote because it's so true. I mean, I started my business, my dog, when I adopted my own dog, he's 16 now, 15 wow. years ago. I know, we're really lucky. Still moving along. He's a little tired, but we're still moving and grooving. But, you know, 15 years ago, I stumbled upon my dog and he really changed my life and guided me. I started a dog walking business. I didn't know what I was doing. I moved to LA to be an actress and, you know, all the things. And he really guided me in a direction. And I met people. It was very similar, actually, to the young kid in your story. I met yeah. many people along the way, and it really changed my life in ways I didn't really understand it could at the time. I was just starting a gig, and I knew I wanted to spend every day with my dog. So I really love that quote. But this is your first, this is your only book, as far as I know, that really centers around the human-animal bond. Am I correct in that, or?
That's fair. I mean, animals have appeared in my books periodically along through yeah. the years, but this is the first time it took center stage, really.
Is it something that was inspired by kind of your own connection with dogs, or is there...
Yeah. Yeah. I can come at that from a couple of angles.
Yeah.
One is Dexter, who just passed away.
Yeah.
It's been a nearly unbroken 28 year continuum between Chunk, his predecessor,
uh-huh.
and Dexter. Chunk, we got as a kind of a transitional being when we uprooted the kids from Boston,
okay.
first to Ireland and then into Scotland. And she was a Springer Spaniel. She was just like just the sweetest natured creature. And she was mm-hmm. perfect for what she did. There were other dogs along the way, you know, sidekicks. Uh-huh. But basically it started in July of 96
okay.
when we left Boston to try and give the kids something to settle with.
Yeah.
And she was perfect. She was absolutely perfect. You could reach into her mouth and take out a ham sandwich and she yeah. would not bite. And she right. let the kids do whatever they wanted to her. I mean, I would look out the back window and there they were. They had her tipped up over upside down and
yeah.
walking around there. So everything about her was ideal for the job.
Right.
And then with impeccable timing, my daughter left to go to university. And then my daughter had her first child, my first grandchild.
Yeah.
And then my son went to go to university, and it was an empty nest for the first time. And, you know, after Walker went to University of Aberdeen, 1 month later, Chunk died.
Oh.
We had her from 2 weeks mm-hmm. after we got here mm-hmm. to 1 month after he left.
Yeah.
And what happened then was I surprised myself and everybody else, but it took about 3 months before I realized, I said, something's missing here. Mm-hmm. I never considered I was going to get another dog.
Right.
In fact, when I told the kids, they were like, what? Like you have an interior life of your own? You
yeah.
have
thought?
But I missed it. I missed all the things. I missed rhythm of the day.
Yeah.
Getting up periodically and going out, and I just missed, you know, just having a warm body there.
Yeah.
And so it took 3 months, and I went back to the same rescue place, which we got her at 10 years later. But they've closed down since then. But I kept, you know, test driving their dogs, walking them, and then he popped up one day. He just came out of the van. They were rotating them. They rotate them around different sites.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
And he comes out. I was like, where have you been all my life? And that was Dexter. And you know what? He was there at the beginning of the empty nest.
Yeah.
My wife is a teacher. So her days kind of mimic the rhythm of the days when the kids were here. That was right. That would be my work day. But there was a big hole in the middle. And so I got Dax, and he was just, you know, my companion. He was always right there for the next 13 years, which included this book, by the way, was signed up in 2015.
Wow.
For a lot of reasons, it got sidetracked over and over again, having to do with health issues and car crashes and deaths of family and deaths of editors and all of this. And it just got waylaid. And Dex was like the constant there with me the whole time through what I consider to be my wilderness years. Really, professionally, I had quite a disappearing act. I was still doing what I do, but it didn't look like it from the outside.
And, common with many creatives, yes.
Yes. And then, you know, and then the book took the shape that it took.
Yeah.
And I picked this great photo that everybody loves I haven't used an author photo in a long, long time.
Okay.
But I said, this has to happen. And I put Dex on the book, and everybody's talking about Dex here. I mean, and then he made it again, almost exactly like Chunk. Like he knew what his assignment was, and he made it to a month before the book comes out. I'm going to publicize the book next week.
March 11th, I think the book comes out, correct?
Yeah, the 12th. And he made it to whatever, 29th of January.
He's like, you can take it from here. Yeah.
He did.
He did. Oh, that's going to make me cry. Yeah. Because that's, you know, I'm feeling that with my dog too. You know, it's like.
And now there's Selkie.
Yeah. I love that both of them came in with a clear vision, clear goal. Like, this is my job. I'm here for you. This is what we're doing. And, you know.
Precisely. Yeah. It precisely as if they knew. Mm-hmm. And now Selkie's listening to the whole thing. So she knows it's cut out for her. And as for the book becoming dog-centric.
Yeah.
After the whole thing with being in the wilderness, and I had to be rematched with an editor because my editor got sick and retired and died. Mm-hmm. And I was orphaned for about a year. And then they finally matched me up with Kendra Levin, who's been a god. She's been a godsend.
Great.
She kept asking, I knew I wanted to write this book about this kid who was a bystander and happy to be so. Mm-hmm. And just like.
Yeah.
But he had this pilgrim's progress from someone who didn't want to be involved to someone who gets integrated into the world. That's
right.
And she said, well, what's your vehicle? You know, how are we going to deliver this? What is your follow the magic footprints of this journey? And I said, I've had this back burner idea that I wanted to match with something else based on my theory that dog walkers make the world go round.
I love that.
Every news story, right?
Yeah.
Dog walkers found the dead body. Dog walkers found the burning vehicle. Mm-hmm. Dog walkers found the people thrashing around in the river about to die. Where would we be without dog walkers stumbling across everything? And I thought, there's a vehicle that gets this kid out of the house and interacting with people and with canines, all of which contributes to his journey. Because my original plan to have him just be a kid who's just like, no, thanks. I don't want to get involved. I'm just going to stay here at home. It's never been a compelling read.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like he seems like he was very comfortable. He didn't know what he was missing really by not being out there in the world. And he was comfortable doing so. He really could have cared less, but it's those dogs that really.
Yeah, he didn't see the problem until he was dragged outside.
He didn't see the problem. Yeah. They forced him, and they gave him confidence and purpose and forced him to connect.
Indeed.
Kind of open those doors. Yeah. Let me ask, what's the most important lesson you think? The main character's name is Lewis, correct?
Yep.
What do you think the most important lesson he learned throughout that journey?
This one's pretty easy, actually.
Okay.
I lifted it almost directly. I altered it slightly. This saying from a women's shelter in Boston called Rosie's Place, which I believe was the first women's shelter in the United States. And it was founded in like 1974 by a heroic woman named Kip Tiernan. And to this day, they have a quote of hers posted in there. And it couldn't match my hero's journey more perfectly. It is, the journey must be made in the company of others, which is the opposite of how he enters the book. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a more poetic way of saying no man is an island.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the dogs sort of took him through this journey and made him see it.
Right.
But that's what he saw when he got there.
That's a fantastic lesson. I think it takes some of us a long time to learn that lesson, right?
Yeah, I'm still learning it.
Yeah, I'm still learning too.
You know, I'm going out to promote the book and I'm like, does this really have to happen?
That stuff is so hard. It just takes a different side of you, you know, as an artist, right? So it's
some people are more naturally that way inclined. I know a lot of them who are great at it. And once I get into a rhythm when I'm where I'm supposed to be and it's going well, I'm all right at it, but I'm not by nature a public facing person. It's good that I do what I do for a job.
Yeah, absolutely. I one question I wanted to ask you. I've had very few authors on here, and I myself am not, I'm not a writer. Like, I don't, you know, I cannot sit down. I've tried. I've even tried to write blog posts. Okay. It's just, I can't. It's not my jam. I don't know. I wish it was, because I'm surrounded by some pretty amazing people and some amazing writers. My sister's a writer, you know, and a book editor, and she just comes so naturally to her. It's just something I can't grasp my head around. And I wanted to know, like, what, as a professional author, what do you find the most difficult about writing for you? And how do you get through that? Maybe it just varies depending on what you're working on, but
it does to a degree. But I've come to the conclusion that there are three strata to the writing of books. First is conceptualization. You know, what am I going to write about? What is this? Right. What is the structure? The last strata is sentence level, writing sentences and paragraphs, which I love.
Okay.
I'm fond of saying that writing sentences is fun. Writing books is hard.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there's the middle strata is, how do you link all that stuff up? How do you make those sentences and paragraphs say the thing you have proposed at the beginning in your conceptualization? And that is the hard part. How do you build all the pieces of the mosaic into it to make a picture?
Right.
And, you know, structure it perfectly. That has always bedeviled me more than the other stuff. I've gotten better at the other stuff. Mm-hmm. I will always struggle with that big
middle ground.
And, and the answer to how it gets done.
Yeah.
I love editors. I love editing.
I
like being edited more as I get older, which is probably counterintuitive. But I need and want more as I get older.
That makes sense to me. I mean, you're really working on the creative aspect, and you're really just getting your vision out there, and then they can fine tune, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
There's more satisfaction in that, maybe, for some. Yeah.
And they can keep insisting that I have structure, that I don't. See, it's sort of like, once you know, it took me forever to learn to write like an elevator pitch, like, this is what the book is about, right?
Yeah.
It took me forever to learn that. In the early days, it took me more words to describe what my book was about than there are words in the book. I was just lousy at it. But over the years, and again, I learned this more or less from the editor who died, David Gale. Mm. He said, basically, you know, we look for three-level elevator pitch. Pretend I'm trapped on an elevator with you, and I say, okay, you got my attention. Give me a sentence. What's your book about? Mm-hmm. And if it's a good, compelling sentence, I'll say, all right, give me a paragraph.
Okay.
And then you give them a paragraph, what it's about. And if that works, and these are two different skills, and here comes the third one, he'll say, okay, you hooked me. Give me a page. And any writer worth his or her salt He's got to say, right, if I got you that far,
yeah,
well, you're going to read a page of mine, I have you. And so what happened when I finally got that was I learned to write at the beginning what my book was about, mm-hmm. which I never did before. I always followed my nose. I still do, mm-hmm. but I know now it has to be about something. So with that through line in place, I would always, my writing still does the same thing. It's a slalom down the hill, right? Mm-hmm. With that through line as the center.
Yeah.
But in the old days, the slalom would go, and I'd go way out on untethered yeah. walks today, and then come back. But now, when I've been forced to land on what my book is about at the beginning, I still slalom, but I don't veer too far off. Everything I do, all my little side trips, serve that through line.
Okay.
Because I don't allow myself to go too far away from it. Everything's got to feed back into it. I had one, my favorite backhanded compliment came from a big guy in the library industry who was telling one of my former editors, and it came back to me. He goes, Chris writes so well about stuff nobody cares about.
Oh my God.
And it was, first, I will take any great line, funny line, anywhere I can get it. And it made me laugh. But secondly, it focused my mind. I'm like,
right.
Yeah, I could do what I do and still be writing about something. Because
right.
I like to write dialogue. I write characters. I write humor. I can do all that within a structure that says this is what the book is about.
Right.
So since then, I've focused a lot more on it.
That's great. It's funny how someone can say one thing and it changes your whole...
Yeah.
You carry that with you. Like people can say so many things and there's just one thing that something someone says and you carry that with you and it can...
Now that you put it that way, I do see why I'm an oaf.
What do you think... So if we can circle back to this particular book for young readers, what do you think you would like your young readers to take away from this book? What's the one thing that you hope that they take away?
Basically, I'm going to go back to that saying, but
okay.
I'm going to couple it with, I mean, just because you think you're not the problem doesn't mean you're not the problem. Not being a participant in life is not good enough. Mm-hmm. Just because you're not the one, you yourself identify as
yeah.
screwing things up for other people.
Right.
It's probably not good enough. Mm-hmm. And against your nature, you might have to force yourself out into life.
Yeah. I think that's so appropriate, especially for the times now when people, it feels like, you know, people, everyone's just kind of overwhelmed and a lot of people just don't want to participate. They're just not interested or it's just too much and they just want to go back into their hidey holes, right?
There's a lot out there to want to shrink from right now.
Yes, there is. Absolutely. Hi, Silky. You're so
Silky
pretty.
Silky.
Look at you. All right. Well, thank you, Chris. I appreciate you jumping on.
Thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it. Cheers.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Beru Podcast. As always, if you enjoyed the episode, please don't forget to rate and follow the Beru wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram at Beru Podcast. And if you have a story of canine companionship that you'd like to share with me, or you have a question, or even a comment, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me, Charlotte@theberu.com. All right, you guys, let's chat soon.